B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
Put it up.
Bob Cooney. Jamie Lynch. And Sam Wilson. Now, start your day with Farzetta and Trey on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning. My microphone or my headphone turned all the way down for whatever reason. But here we are. What's going on, everybody? What a night. What a night. Sixers lose. T.O. and Donovan at it again. First, it was Donovan asked about the old days. Trey, you were there.
Yeah, well, I was there.
We have that fun conversation. We got allegedly gritty punching 13-year-olds. I don't know what the hell's going on. A defensive back coach being interviewed by the Eagles. So much to get into. And although fighting is always a juicy thing, it can draw attention from even the weakest of minds. And we certainly will delve back into it. And here's the thing. I was on T.O.'s lawn. I was in his driveway as that was happening.
I was there the next day.
Really?
I wasn't there for the sit-ups, but I was there for the follow-up next day.
See,
yes.
I was there after this, like shortly after the sit-ups happened. And then I was there the following day.
Oh, we were there together.
Oh, look at that.
In the Morristown court.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I remember he goes out in his driveway and he starts shooting baskets and he starts challenging people to play for their game checks. He's like, all right, you play for check for check. I'm going to hold out right now looking for more money. This is T.O. speaking, Trey. And he goes, I'm going to hold out for more money. I'll play you for your check. So he's, for the paycheck or whatever it is. Uh-huh. And then Jason Mertedis, who was also there, goes, well, T.O., he's an intern, so he's not making any money. And I was like, Jason, shh. I have nothing to lose here. No paycheck. Let's party. So sure enough, he just said, all right, next, and just looked around and nobody played him in basketball, but I was this close to having nothing to lose against T.O.
There you go.
But anyway.
Yeah, I was there when he got kicked out of practice that day.
That was it a film session? What was that? A study? Was that?
It was right after we got out the field and he had to do autograph signing. Because, back then we had to... Big Red would have to, at each segment, would have to do the autographs. So it would be offensive line, then your receivers or whatever, and it was the receiver's time to do autographs. T.O. wasn't having it.
He wasn't signing autographs that day.
Yeah, no, he was, upset.
On that hot, what would it have been, July
morning? 150 degrees.
After the
nice
first practice.
Steamy.
So that's what started it all?
Yeah, yeah. And then he and Big Red had some words in the training room.
Let the boy watch.
I believe shut up was used.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of words being used. And then, T.O. was sent home.
T.O. said afterwards that my last name's not Reed, so you can't tell me to shut up. In other words, like, I'm not one of your kids. You can't tell me to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was interesting. I heard it was also, did Brad Childress, was he there? Did he get involved in this at all?
I don't remember Brad being in it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So then T.O. goes
there was other incidents, though, but, not so much.
Not with T.O. He's a one-time offender. Yeah, there's only one time he ever had an issue with anybody.
He was always in Bible study with us. What are you talking about?
So we will tell that story again. We'll go back. Trey will give his take on the whole thing because we only know it from the outside looking in. Trey knows it in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And we look at it as a city that maybe it did cost us a Super Bowl. It certainly seemed to at least cost us one. And T.O. did come back for that Super Bowl. And I agree with him wholeheartedly when he said if anybody else came back from a broken leg, they'd be talking about what a warrior this guy is. I remember at the time he even said if Brett Favre did it, oh, what a warrior. He guts it out for his teammates. He comes back when they need him most for the Super Bowl. But T.O., it's like, oh, yeah, T.O.'s got to make it about him. The man just fought back from a broken leg.
Yeah.
I always admired him for it. And I will go down the list of blame. And I'll let you know where T.O. falls on my list. Trey, you check my work here. You tell me if I'm right or wrong. Uh-huh. So we'll go down that list a little bit later in the program. Certainly, here's the thing. That whenever this comes up, nobody says they want to talk about it. But everyone wants to talk about it. Because it's drama surrounding what could have cost this city a Super Bowl. We could have won a Super Bowl 14 years prior than we did. here in Philadelphia. It's an unfortunate thing. And you think about the difference it would have made in a lot of people's lives. It would have made a lot of people's lives a lot more bright going back those 13, 14 years ago.
Yeah, it would have.
But it didn't.
But it didn't.
But and it didn't because
we had man children fighting in the media.
It would have been so much better if they were just a not talented team that made it to a Super Bowl. And oh my God, they won. Cool. No, the fact that they lost and still had some great players on that team, that's what cut you even deeper. And the fact that you were going back to an NFC Championship game for the third year in a row and you finally win and then you lose the big game, the Super Bowl. And it's more so because of drama that he didn't go back more so than anything else. There is one thing that I agree with Donovan on. We'll let you hear from him. There's about 60 seconds we have isolated of his interview with Bleacher Report where he goes back. And again, he's asked about this. People always act as if Donovan volunteers this information. He was asked about what blew it up back then. In 2005, it would have been during that awful, awful season. So we'll jump all into that, of course. 610-632-0975. You have something out of the gates on Donovan McNabb and Terrell Owens. But what is really more so on my mind and more relevant to today is what the hell happened last night in Toronto with the 76ers. Now, upon the conclusion of the game, when the Sixers were still close, actually, in the fourth quarter, I was thinking to myself, all right, well, if this slips away, if you would have told me going into this game that essentially the Sixers were going to be down two of their five starters and they were going into Toronto where they have not won since Doug Collins was running the team, I would have said there's no way they win this game. I thought that they would at least cover the 6.5. But losing Josh Richardson four minutes into the game, I did not have a lot of confidence going forward. They had a great first quarter. Scored, what, 34, 35 points in
35,
that first quarter?
Yeah.
35 points in the first quarter.
Uh-huh.
But the wheels certainly came off after that. And I looked at Ben Simmons' performance in the fourth quarter. He disappeared yet again. Al Horford had, I believe, 6 points in the first 4 minutes of the game and then had one the rest of the way. Cool. And then you also have whatever the hell substitutions we were going with after Josh Richardson went out, and I still can't get over that. But I always, and you guys know this by now, I always look at players before I look at the coach. I can't believe Ben disappeared when they needed him most in the fourth quarter, and I can't believe number two right there, Brett Brown, went with apparently the savior of the game without Josh Richardson, Shake Milton.
Free Shake!
Okay, he was freed, and I wanted to lock him back up again. But he was just, I don't know what he's doing with over 20 minutes of play last night. That was the only other thing that really got under my skin, other than, hey, has anyone seen Ben? I see a lot of Shake. Where's Ben? That's the thing that got under my skin last night. After a struggling Ben Simmons, after Al Horford disappearing in a game where he's your number one guy, he's your number one center, and after Josh Richardson going down. Can't do anything about the injury. It is what it is. But watching those guys play, if you would have told me again, going into that game, no Embiid, and you only have Josh Richardson for 4 minutes, and you tell me in the fourth quarter it's a five-point game, yeah, that's a game the Sixers can win. But the number, I'll tell you this, right out of the gate, the number that jumped out to me more than anything, we talked about numbers going in. Bob, you wanted Ben Simmons to have, what, 14 shots?
Yeah, anything above 13, yes.
Anything above 13.
Yep.
So 14 or more for Ben Simmons.
Yep.
He obviously didn't get that.
Seven.
He made his foul shots, for the most part.
He did.
So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
But the number that even more so jumped out to me about last night's game was the fact that the Sixers shot 46 three-pointers. I don't bang that drum nearly as much as other people because the Sixers...
Go ahead, you can say it. Like me.
But it's not just you. I hear from a lot of people, Bob. Mm. It's not just you banging the drum saying, what the hell is this team doing shooting so many threes? They're bottom five in the NBA in three-point attempts. So, okay. They're middle of the road in three-pointers made. It's not like they shoot the most and they're the worst, although that's how I think a lot of people take it. But there's no way you could justify this team taking 46 threes in one game on the road against Toronto when you don't have three-point shooters on this squad. You're still trying to grow Furkan Korkmaz. Matisse Thybulle went through a huge stretch of just bricking shots. For as great as his defense always is, he was bad from the three-point line last night. And you expect this team to rally and come back via the three-pointer? And I know they're playing a little 2-3 zone in this game. And that was annoying. You broke the, you were able to beat the zone at one point with Ben. God, he actually brought the ball up and beat the zone. Go figure. But 46 three-pointers to try to beat the Toronto Raptors last night, that's not what was going to get it done. That was, other than injury and you can't control it, and other than Ben disappearing and Shake Milton getting the minutes, the 46 three-point attempts is what got under my skin the most.
People say, oh, 39% though. Do adjusted field goal percentage and it works. They're not a good three-point shooting team. Look at the way they take their three-point. Al Horford shooting a three-pointer when his feet aren't set, I don't want that. Tobias Harris shooting a three-pointer when his feet aren't set, I don't want that. Matisse Thybulle, no. Mike Scott, no. Stop. You missed, let's look at it another way. You missed 28 threes last night. 28 threes you missed last night. Where's the bully ball? Where's what the hell's going on that you start the fourth quarter with a lineup of Pell, Korkmaz, Neto, Scott, Shake Milton? What?
Against Toronto. In Toronto.
What the hell are you doing? Now, Tobias played 40 minutes. Ben Simmons played 37. Okay. You're putting a lineup out there like that to start a fourth quarter against a team you kind of want to learn how to win against? One playoff win in Toronto and no regular season win since, like as you said, Doug Collins? What the hell are you doing?
I don't know. But Trey,
Shake Milton, 22 minutes.
Trey, did you roll any dice on this game last night?
Oh, no. I was not touching this game.
6.5. Sixers were getting 6.5 to start out the game. And I'm looking at it and I'm going, oh, wow, this is interesting. They don't have Josh Richardson 4 minutes into this game is when he left. He pulled up. I thought he tripped over something and pulled something. No, he turned to his left and he left the game.
He's out for a couple weeks. Because he's had a hamstring problem earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
He's done for a couple weeks.
That's what it feels like right
and
now.
And I was just talking to Bob about this in the 5 o'clock hour. The entire NBA, I feel like, is made of 80% two guards. And we've got none.
Yeah.
Outside Josh Richardson, there's nobody that can step in on this team right now and fill that role.
Well, we found out that guy's not Shake Milton, so we can cross that name off the list.
Well, considering he's played, what, 4 games over the last month and a half?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nothing against him. I mean, it's not his fault. My Shake Milton crusade here today has nothing to do with Shake Milton.
Well, he's not telling the coach, hey, I'm playing 23 minutes. That's not how that works. So that was a little upsetting to watch that.
How does Trey Burke not get on the court?
That's a great question. I don't know how that
I guess his dad didn't make the trip.
It's been a while since his dad said anything. Maybe the Sixers need a little bit of that coaching on the sideline there to help him out, to get a guy like Trey Burke in. When you're struggling that much with guard play, Shake Milton should never be the answer to that. And it's not like, look, he got 9 points for you off the bench. Fine. But to play 23 minutes when you've barely seen him all year. Like when Serena Winters asked the question after the game, hey, so Shake Milton, it's been a while since we've seen him. Like, It was the nicest way to say what the hell. Like that was, I think that was what a lot of people were thinking after watching that. Because Trey, I think a lot of people have the same thought that you thought. Trey Burke's not in this game. When you need somebody that can score a little bit, you need someone who's not going to be bombing threes, but trying to penetrate, trying to get guys into foul trouble, trying to draw fouls, trying to get to the line. And instead, the better option here is Shake Milton. Now look, he didn't play terrible for a guy that played 23 minutes, but you would think that there'd be a better contingency plan for when Josh Richardson leaves a game, and there was none last night. The other thing that really got under my skin, and I hate blaming refs, and they didn't lose this game because of the refs, but how the hell can Kyle Lowry draw a foul under the basket when the ball goes through, Ben Simmons dishes it off, I forget who ended up finishing, it might have been Norvell Pell, who also got a lot of run last night. And you make the 2 points, and you put it the other way because you call an offensive foul on Ben Simmons after he basically was coming down already, got rid of the basketball, and Lowry flops. Then, a little bit later, Furkan Korkmaz draws a charge, a good charge. Nick Nurse decides to challenge it, and they actually overturn it. How the hell does that happen? This game was beyond frustrating. Again, if you tell me you go into this game, you're missing some players, I don't expect to win. But when you see that down the stretch this game was in your reach and they lose it because of mismanaging, or they miss it because they're jacking up threes left and right and there's nobody playing down low for you. There was one glimmer of hope I had for the Sixers in this game. One glimmer of hope. I want to say it was about 4:20 left in the fourth quarter. They're running a 2-3 zone. Ben Simmons brings the ball up. It's the play I was alluding to earlier. Ben Simmons brings the ball up. He dishes over to Furkan Korkmaz, who's at the foul line extended on the perimeter. Furkan puts it down to Al Horford. Al Horford hits Ben Simmons, who's streaking to the basket, going right through the zone, gets an easy two point, gets an easy layup right there. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, we broke a zone. We beat a zone. Good for you guys. Yeah, you never saw it again. At some point, there has to be some sort of consistency. It has to come from your, it has to come from Ben Simmons. If you're really just referring to what's on the court last night, Shake Milton, I know, is going to really bother people. But how, after a 34-point performance, and this is why you always have to take into consideration whoever it's against. It was against the Nets. All right. Bottom line is Ben Simmons still did it. Can he do something like that against another superior team like the Toronto Raptors? And he couldn't. Mm-hmm. Especially in the fourth quarter. I wasn't expecting Ben to have 30-plus points. I wasn't expecting him to have 12-plus assists or 12-plus rebounds or anything like that last night. Ben Simmons is a guy that's supposed to be your star, especially with Joel Embiid being out. And you watched him last night, and at any point did you go, oh, that's our star. Good for Ben Simmons. He'll carry you. Like, Bob, when you referenced the lineup that was starting out the fourth quarter, the whole time I'm thinking, all right, well, Ben's not in yet. Keep it close. Hopefully Ben can be a plus six or seven in the fourth quarter, and maybe he can get some points for himself. Also, that stellar defense. And you know what? The Sixers can get a win here. No, it didn't happen. He came in, and he didn't really offer much.
No, he came in with 7 minutes to go. They're down three. First offensive possession he has, Shake Milton's, like, posting up at the three-point line, and Ben Simmons throws, like, this little, you know, oh, here, try to go get that. Picked off by Ibaka, who goes in, slams, gets fouled, game over, pretty much. Ben Simmons didn't play downhill last night.
No.
Not even a little bit. I'm watching the beginning of the game, and it's you standing there, and he's doing like this shake dribble between the legs, standing outside. There's no speed to his game at all. He's not playing downhill. He's not forcing a defender to get on his heels and be like, oh, man, I got to stop this guy. No, he played exactly into what Toronto wanted to do. Now, Toronto was collapsing and all that. Fine. That's what you're going to face. But Ben Simmons can't figure it out. Like, this is what's so frustrating about him. Seven shots last night? Seven?
That's
after a 34-point performance, you shoot seven times?
That's literally half the amount of shots you
wanted to
take.
Eight turnovers?
Yeah.
Eight turnovers.
Rest of the team at five? You came in, your team's down three with 7 minutes to go in the game, and you basically come in and just throw the ball to the other team. Then you try to steal it. You miss it. They go in, slam dunk, foul. All of a sudden, a three-point game becomes, you know, five, six, seven, eight, boom, like that, and over.
For a guy that plays as many minutes as he does every single night, is he pacing himself, Ben Simmons? Because I'd rather see him put up a performance against the Raptors than he did against the Nets. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be all systems go two nights prior, and you can't bring it against the Raptors in the fourth quarter, he went back to his old ways last night. Old ways. This is his ways from like five games ago. Like, but over the last five games leading up to, and I referenced these numbers before, leading up to that Nets game, he had only scored about 5 points in the fourth quarter of the five previous games combined. Last night, he scored two. And he had, what, one rebound? It was his only other statistic, other than maybe a turnover, in the fourth quarter. That's not the go-to guy. That's not the all-star. And real all-stars are supposed to rise to the occasion. And last night, Ben Simmons did not do that even. I know people always want to scream and yell about Brett Brown. Ah, the coach doesn't know what he's doing. Hey, you know what? Last night, not impressing. Not, it didn't impress me even a little bit. But you want to talk about your star, the guy that's remaining after Joel Embiid goes out, and you want to see that dog in the fight, as they say, and Ben Simmons backs down from it. He didn't rise to the occasion. He backed away from it, especially in the fourth quarter. I mentioned, what, a plus six or seven in the fourth quarter you want him to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're down on three. You didn't even need that much when he came into the game. Mm-hmm. Whole time I'm thinking, all right, you know what? You keep this close, because I don't even think Pascal Siakam was on the floor for the early goings of the fourth quarter either, which isn't abnormal by any means. But I'm thinking, I know they're going to get Siakam back in there, but Ben's also coming back. Ben's got to lead this charge. And yeah, no one can get anything going for him.
Yeah, he doesn't understand if start fast and finish strong too. You know, and he doesn't finish strong towards the game. He gets lost, like you were saying. And then, like, that's where everybody has been complaining about, you know, hey, just having just that little mid-range jumper. When the defense collapses on you, mate, so you can pull up and shoot that jumper, but you don't want to.
That's the thing that is most frustrating. Again, last night was another night where you saw everything in the paint with him, all seven of those shots. You didn't even really see that baby hook last night from him. Like, that's when you know he's so, most comfortable. I don't want to just take away from this game that he went to the foul line, had nine foul shots. Good for him. He missed two.
Yeah.
So that's a good night from the line. get there more often if it's working for you. And that's when I saw that play happen where they're able to beat the zone, I thought, all right, this is perfect. And you did see at one point Ben playing down low a lot more, similar to what he did against the Nets. And I'm like, all right, at least Brett's mixing it up a little bit here, because this is what you're going to need to do without Al Horford giving you anything. And you know Joel Embiid's not in this game. And you need the offensive scoring because Josh Richardson's not there being able to contribute as well. So he thought, all right, let's get more of this going, because you know at least Ben's going to get to the foul line. And over his last two games, he's been shooting pretty well. Let's exploit that as much as possible to help this team win. No, you barely saw it as well. It was a very, very frustrating loss for the Sixers last night. And it doesn't get any easier. The Lakers are coming to town. And they're just off the charts this year. They're just off the charts this
year. Yeah, they're pretty good.
Yeah, they're pretty good at that basketball. Yeah. There was another thing that happened in the NBA last night. Zion Williamson made his debut. We'll talk about that. 22 points for the rookie. If you're just a basketball fan, that's fun to see. But, you know,
doubled Ben Simmons' output of three-pointers last night in one game. And this is a guy that didn't shoot in college either.
Oh, yeah.
And he went
he's a basketball player, though.
Yeah, he went 4-for-4 from three.
Oh, yeah. But wow. Is that his basketball player?
So wait, they were playing off of him because he is such a good penetrator with the basketball, right? So we had some wide open threes, and he took them, and he made them.
Yeah.
Guys, basketball players don't shoot. Come on, stop it. Seriously? You're gonna hot take me?
You're going to go there?
You're going to hot take me this early in the morning? Seriously? So we have plenty of meat on the bone when it comes to the 76ers. And I hate doing this because it is such a blast from the past, but I feel cheated as a fan. I feel cheated as a fan because, and Trey, I can't imagine, you literally got cheated in that Super Bowl because that Bill Belichick character literally got cheated and then possibly cheated out of a Super Bowl the following year because two guys couldn't figure it out. God bless you that you could smile after that.
Hey, what else you going to do?
See, that's why you're a thousand times better man than I am.
I mean, it's over with. I can't sit up there and keep crying about it. What you want me to do?
I have
to move on.
Right. But we can't.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, we can't.
Maybe
because you lived it.
We can, or Donovan and T.O. can't.
No, we can't.
Well, it turns out it was all Westbrook's fault.
Yeah.
It's,
Boots. It's Lil Boots' fault.
Lil Boots.
That son of a...
Donovan went to bat for Lil Boots instead of T.O., and it ruined the team.
You guys always shoot me down, but what have I always told you? B. West, locker room poison. What have I always said? It's cancer in the locker room. I always try to get that across, and you guys just keep on shooting me down. So we got that to talk about. Kidding, of course, kids. We got that to talk about. And then this gritty story. There's two things that just make me go, like, I don't believe anybody here.
You come at the king, you best not miss, Mark. Well, just say that, to quote the famous Omar.
I almost tweeted you back yesterday and be like, dude, don't ruin it. Spoiler.
I did talk your wife into sticking with the wire.
She told me.
Okay,
yeah, she told you let me into some of that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not jumping ship.
All right, good.
I'm not jumping ship.
Well, good, you shouldn't.
You're damn right. Because I'm on episode 3 of The Wire right now, and I'm really excited about the rest of it. So we got all that to talk about. Just I don't know who to believe in this gritty story. Two things that came out, and we'll get to it a little bit later, just make me look at you and go, I don't believe either of you. I don't believe anybody in this story. Yeah. We'll get to that a little bit later. But coming up, we'll let you hear a little bit from the Sixers postgame and what happened in this loss to the Raptors. A winnable game without Joel Embiid. Without Josh Richardson for the vast majority of the game, only played 4 minutes last night before leaving with a hamstring, and a little bit later we'll jump into that fun story, that feel-good story of T.O. versus McNabb versus Brian Westbrook?
Yeah, how about that?
610-632-0975. Time of the Fanatic is 6:21.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
6 o'clock hour is brought to you by United Rentals Power and HVAC. For all your power generation and HVAC rentals in the tri-state area, visit UnitedRentals.com. Also, don't forget about the Fanatic Deal of the Week. For a limited time, get one all-area lift ticket to Spring Mountain Adventures, valid weekdays and weekends during the 2020 season. For just $24, that's access to 8 trails, 6 lifts, and two terrain parks for 50% off. Check it out now at 975thefanatic.com. Keyword deal. So last night we're watching the game unfold for the... I can't just ignore this. So somebody sent you pictures to autograph, Trey?
Yes. Yes, I got a nice stack of pictures.
A stack of pictures?
Yes.
Would you say there's like 10 pictures?
Yeah, probably about 10, 11 pictures of small ones and then a big one.
Yeah.
Some great photos in there. And yeah. I went, oh, Trey, look, you as a Charger. That's a rare one.
Yeah, it's not me. It is a Thomas on the back of the jersey.
Oh, all right. You know, that's good.
But
that's definitely not you.
Definitely not me.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy has like on a do-rag.
He looks like a smaller fella.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely not me, though. But it's a football picture.
It is a football picture, and I also want to acknowledge this as well. They sent you $2.
Yeah, sent me $2. So I have $2 fell out of the envelope.
It's not payment. I believe that it's not payment. I believe that it's just for postage. That person that's sending it to you is a very nice person because he's saying, I don't want this to cost you anything other than the time to write your name on this, sign these photos.
Well, isn't that when you go self-addressed?
That's yeah, what why couldn't you have sent the postage?
Yeah.
I think maybe there was no self-addressed stamp envelope in there?
All right, maybe
there is a self-addressed envelope on there.
Oh, so I think he was buying you a cup of Joe on top of it.
There's no postage on the envelope.
Yeah, he boned you.
Yeah.
That's for postage.
So you have to go out and buy the postage.
Yeah, I got to go buy the postage.
How much do stamps cost nowadays? Aren't they more than $2?
I have no idea.
I just went out and bought a couple books of stamps before Christmas.
They're not cheap. I bought two books recently. I think it was like $24.
Oh, so you might have come on up.
He sent you an errand. He mailed you an errand.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, so now I have to go to the post office.
I'm still old school. I send in some of my bills with stamps. Like snail mail.
I remember the first time I bought a book of my mom was like, hey, go to the grocery store to get a book of stamps. I was like, a whole book of them? I was like, all right, I'll go. And I went, and they just give you like the little page, the little tiny, like, it looks like a bookmark.
Yeah.
And I was like, This is a book? This is a book of stamps? You guys got to find a different way to refer to this, because this is very confusing. I thought I had failed. And she's like, oh, thanks. And I'm like, oh, I guess I did my job. Look at that. Well, I would take it, Trey, as that person just tipping you for signing the fine photos.
Yeah.
So we can revel in that.
I have to put some money on some stamps. I got to go get some stamps.
I'm looking up how much stamps are now, Trey.
This isn't even my thing.
Anyway.
55 cents.
55 cents?
Wow. The cost of 1 ounce first-class mail stamp is 55 cents at the post office. So you made money today, brother.
You think so? Well, this has to go to Texas, though. I mean, but that's 55 cents.
Oh, that's that might have to go first class. You're right.
This is a big envelope here, so I'm thinking it takes more than one stamp. I don't know.
Well, you know what? The person tried.
Yeah.
Let's just give them credit for that.
Because his postage right here was $4.69.
Oh, wow.
My man knew what he was doing. So yesterday, Sixers fall to the Raptors in Toronto. Tell me if you've heard that one before. And it's very unfortunate. Ben Simmons again disappears in that fourth quarter. But here's, I guess, one thing you can look at is that Matisse Thybulle, I give him credit for this. The man's not afraid. Defensively, he has put it up every single game. Every single game he has played in, he has played spectacular defensive basketball. There was one instance last night. It was a foul on Serge Ibaka as Serge Ibaka had a breakaway, and Matisse Thybulle kind of threw his hand in there for a last-second foul. And I'm thinking, well, that's just dumb.
But stupid, and it was weak.
Yes, and I'm nitpicking there, but still, nonetheless, he was getting quality minutes, as you should be getting, especially without Joel Embiid, especially without Josh Richardson in the lineup. Up for all but 4 minutes of last night's game thanks to a hamstring injury. So last night in the locker room after the game, Matisse Thybulle got asked about being put in a winning situation with the rest of his teammates. Here he is last night after the game.
Like, I take what the game gives me. Like, I don't feel like I'm like, oh, you gotta play me, I can do this, blah, blah, blah. It's never ever been my mentality, like, through my whole career. And I've been lucky to be put in really good positions where I can be successful. And I think, like, my success isn't even predicated exactly on what I've done out there, but more so on the position I've been put in. So, like, to take all the credit or think that I need to have more isn't necessarily fair, because it's like a bounce. It's like a give and take.
All right, 27 minutes last night for Matisse Thybulle. 5 of 12 shooting, 3 of 9 from beyond the arc, 13 points. 3 of 9. 9 three-pointers for him last night. 9 times he shot a 3.
Did I catch a niner in there?
There was a niner. There's a big fat niner in that one. Look, there's a mentality I don't want to see creep into Matisse Thybulle's game. Like, I want him to be a 3-and-D guy. I want him to be even better than that, right? Because I think in this town, especially over the last couple of years, when you think of 3-and-D, you think of an underwhelming Robert Covington. But Matisse Thybulle has the ability to be better than that. And he's already a very good rookie, and I'm very impressed with him. But last night, I got worried that the Sixers' version of basketball, the style they like playing, was almost contaminating Matisse Thybulle. I saw him jacking threes last night, and I'm thinking, not yet, young buck.
Yeah.
Not yet. And sure enough, third quarter, fourth quarter, you see. But even before they were down, whatever, it was 10 points in that fourth quarter, you see them trying to play like they're down 10 points at the start of the quarter. And that's just, it's like when you watch a football team play and they're down 7 points in the first quarter, and then you see the other team come back and just start throwing the ball instead of establishing any type of run, acting as if they're down more points. That's the kind of basketball I saw from Matisse Thybulle last night. And I don't want to continue to see that. He's too smart a basketball player. He's too good a rookie to see the rest of this team kind of start to influence him. And that's where, if you really want to talk about Brett Brown after last night's loss, that's where you start looking at Brett. Because I believe the amount of threes they shoot is just the style they want to play. And there's no gunner on this team to justify 46 three-pointers in a game against Toronto that you were in throughout. Up until what? The final 4 minutes of the game?
Yeah.
There's no excuse for that many threes, especially when you watch a rookie still trying to make his bones in the league put up 9 three-pointers.
Yeah, the biggest question is, are they playing to their strengths? And last night was another example of no, you're not. Matisse Thybulle shouldn't be shooting 9 threes. Al Horford shouldn't be shooting 6 threes. I mean, none of these guys should be shooting threes without their feet set. Those type of threes that you shoot when your feet aren't set, that's... There's maybe one guy on the maybe, and I don't even like it when Furkan Korkmaz shoots a three without his feet totally set. Mm-hmm. J.J. Redick, Steph Curry, handful of others, okay, they want to jack threes when their feet aren't totally underneath them, understandable. There's not one person on this team that should be doing it, and if we go back and watch the tape, and I yell every time they did it last night, of those 46 threes, I would say 80% of them weren't open, feet set threes that an average three-point shooter should take.
Here's one thing I want to get into in a second. And Trey, you could break this down better than anybody because you're the professional athlete in the room. Why is it that a player chooses when he plays and when he doesn't play? Like, what is it about a player that makes them go, this is the game I take over? And look, I know that the other team gets paid too.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to know as an ex-player, and I also want to know from fans, you're looking at a guy. Why can't we have a take on something that is completely legitimate? Why does it always have to be one end of the spectrum or the other? Because there's no truth in either of them. Ben Simmons, we all know, is not a 34-point, 12-assist, 12-rebound, 5-steal-a-game type of guy. We know he's not going to do that against the upper echelon teams. If you thought he was going to do that again, that's just ridiculous. That's the biggest homer opinion you could have. But two things. One, from your perspective, how is it a player decides when they flip the switch and when they don't flip the switch? And then from our perspective, why can't we just call Ben Simmons what he is, which is a guy that is still very much trying to grow his game?
Mm-hmm.
And in a game like last night, where he comes into the game with about, 7 minutes, 7.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and he basically disappears for those 7 minutes and 30 seconds. 2 points, one rebound from a guy that just destroyed another basketball team in the Brooklyn Nets. Why is it you can't see him step up and rise to the occasion like he should have in the fourth quarter last night? We'll get that in a second. 610-632-0975. Time to the Fanatic is 640.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
By the way, I do want to apologize just in case you can hear the construction work going on. To me, it's the loudest it's ever been.
We just had a construction guy in the hallway say, "Hey, can you let me in next door? It's so loud in there, they can't hear me knocking." So I had to swipe him into the office next door.
Oh, good. So it's not just me.
No, it's loud today.
It's not just me. It's very loud.
We went down to get coffee on the other side of the building, and you could still hear and feel it. So.
I'm pretty sure I repeated kindergarten because of ADD. I don't even know if that was a thing back in the 80s, but whatever.
It's always been a thing. It just wasn't a thing.
We just didn't talk about it?
Yeah.
You shut your mouth. So, yeah, if it's a little more hyperactive than normal today, it's because I have a buzzsaw in my ear. So that's happening. But shout out to the... Yeah, Bob?
That is bad.
It is bad, isn't it? If that's coming through over the air, our apologies.
Yeah, nothing we can do about it.
No, there's nothing we can do. We can just forge on.
We
can bitch about the Sixers.
We can scream and moan, and I know you said 23 minutes, and officially I guess you're right because I did look up the exact seconds. It's 22 minutes and 31 seconds for Shake Milton. On the 5 o'clock hour, I went ballistic 22 minutes because all the box scores I looked at said 22.
Ah.
So that's my number for the day, 22. What the hell's he doing playing 22 minutes, Mark?
I don't know, but I think the construction workers are listening to us because we just stopped.
I think they heard Shane play 22 minutes and they decided to call it a day.
And it's not, by the way, let me just say this. For the construction workers here, it's not their fault.
No,
they're doing their damn job.
Yeah.
And they're doing a splendid job at that.
Excellent job.
It's good dudes, too. It's cool.
When we walk the hallways, like, you know.
Dan and Joe are good dudes.
Yeah. Awesome.
Always see, you know, always, oh, God, what do you think about the Eagles this weekend? You know, all that. It's cool. It's good bunch of guys doing the work here.
Absolutely.
They haven't let us use any power tools yet, though.
That is kind of
I would like to use a nail gun.
Nail gun would be awesome.
Yeah. Like The Wire, Mark. There's a great scene.
Will you stop it? Seriously.
No spoiler.
Did you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm yet?
Yes.
You did?
Did you know what one of his main themes was?
For what, Curb?
Yeah.
I watched Curb.
Happy New Year's stupid!
Yes. That was coincidence, right? You hadn't seen that before?
No.
That's pretty funny.
I went... Well, Larry David's clearly a fan of the show, and he's been listening.
No question.
And wrote the episode about it.
Yeah, I was reading on, like, HollywoodReporter.com or whatever it was, that he rewrote the entire first episode after listening to our banter.
I get it.
On the Happy New Year.
Was our sales team making fun of you yesterday for saying that? What was going on there? I came in, like, mid-conversation.
Somebody pulled me aside that listens and said, did you catch Curb? And I was like, yeah, that Larry David.
They were talking about that. Okay.
He's a real genius, huh? Happy New Year, stupid! And everybody was like, yeah, we get it, Jamie.
So,
shut up.
I watched the episode of the Flat Earthers.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Is that a Kyrie Irving?
I was just looking at the documentary that you guys told me about.
Mm.
Oh, I think that was a Graph recommendation.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that it was kind of like a...
No, I think it was Jeremy. Hit us up with the Flat Earthers, yeah.
It was kind of like it felt like a dating video for people that believed in Flat Earth.
What?
That get horny for the Flat Earth?
Yeah, it just seemed like it just had that type of feel. Like, hey, look, if we sell this, we make that. And I met her and we hung out. You know, we do Flat Earth stuff.
We do Flat Earth stuff. What kind of stuff do you do?
Talking about the Great Plains.
Yeah, I gave it like 15 minutes. I'm like, all right, I'm out. I can't. This is it. I'm done. The missus was like, what is this?
Oh, Mark, by the way, you were absolutely right about that music with the Aaron Hernandez.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell
When
is
you
that?
Wish upon a star.
They're like Killer Mind, and they're playing Disney music. Like, what is going on here?
Yeah, it was rather surreal.
That was crazy.
It was rather surreal. I still haven't watched the final two. There's three episodes, and I've watched one.
Yeah, you got to watch the rest.
I'm noticing the use of a narrator in a lot of these documentaries they just do away with. And I miss a good narrator, a good narration, because it helps set up the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
It like braces you for a second. I feel like it just kind of comes out with a lot of news that you're like, whoa, well, I wasn't ready for that. I'll let you watch it. I'm not going to ruin it for anybody that hasn't seen it yet. But nonetheless, Sixers lost the rough one last night, and we've been talking about it for the vast majority of the morning. And the guy that I look at the most is Ben. We've talked about this with Joel Embiid, Trey. We've talked about this with various other athletes. Why is it that athletes think it's okay to flip a switch? It makes me feel as if it's not even a choice they make, I don't know, with any logic. It's just kind of something that happens,
mm-hmm.
where they see an opportunity and they go after it. Ben Simmons, gets a big opportunity against the Nets because, what did you know, if the Nets aren't that good at basketball, ergo, they present a good opportunity for somebody to go off. But the Toronto Raptors, one of the best defensive-rated teams in the NBA, and a pretty damn good center that matches up very well, whether Joel Embiid or not, when Marc Gasol comes out and takes care of business, as does Serge Ibaka, and those guys are able to nullify a guy like Ben Simmons, especially late. Why is it that a guy with so much talent like Ben Simmons thinks, nah, I just won't flip the switch right now?
Yeah, and that's a problem. I do not know. If you want to be considered one of the best in the game, that switch is never off for you.
That,
you know, you're going to dominate the teams.
I wrote it down in my notes. Great ones don't flip a switch.
Yeah, it's never off.
It's just how you play.
Always on. You have that mentality of, I'm going to go out and dominate the teams that are weaker than this, and I'm going to go out there and dominate the teams that are supposedly better than us. And I mean, and also, too, if you're going up against an opponent that is supposed to be a little bit better than you, that's when you elevate your game. You're supposed to play on a whole other level. If the switch is, all right, I'm going to go even higher, not just sink down. I don't get it.
See, that's the moments that when people want to, like, going over the top about a 34-point performance and the rebounds and the assists and the steals and all that, going overboard against the Nets and reacting to a game against the Nets is crazy. Look, is it a positive that he did that? Absolutely, it's a positive. Mm-hmm. Good for you. But what are you going to do? What are you going to do against the upper echelon teams? What are you going to do a couple of nights later when you're playing Toronto and you know you're going to have to go through Toronto at some point in the Eastern Conference? What are you going to do against the Bucks? Sixers shot the lights out against the Bucks. Whole other story. What are you doing against the Celtics? They've had their way with the Celtics. Get over this hump of the Toronto Raptors in Toronto. They can't do it.
Yeah. And I'm not kidding. It was 10 seconds into the game before I was like, you got to be kidding me. They get the tap, and Ben Simmons comes down, and he's doing this soft little slow, low dribble, like, all right, I'm just dissecting. Let's see what's going on here. I wanted to see him win a tap, get the ball, and run, and go. Mm-hmm. Go, attack. Make Toronto get back on the heels. Like, whoa, look at this train coming. Make it game two against the Nets last year after he got booed and after people questioned him, and he said, oh, I'm coming out with authority. I want that every night. LeBron James, one time in his career, I saw him flip the switch, and that was that All-Star game that I told you guys about, where it was just back and forth, fun, ha, 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 and then Kobe Bryant got serious early in the fourth quarter, and LeBron James got serious. They didn't flip a switch so much to go to another level. They flipped the switch to go to their normal level.
Mm-hmm. Right. They started playing real basketball.
They started playing for real. Well, LeBron James plays for real every night. Russell Westbrook plays for real every night. Harden, the great ones don't flip switches. Ben Simmons has to learn that.
You look at Ben, and his best game scoring-wise, was against Cleveland, not an upper echelon team. And his next one was against Brooklyn. Like, those aren't the two best teams in the NBA. Now, to his credit, he did play well against Houston in the game they lost in Houston. He did play well and has played well against the Celtics recently, certainly not his rookie year where he scored the 1 point in the playoff game. But this game against Toronto, they shut him down because they are one of the best defensive teams in the NBA. He has not this season, in their, three games they play now this year, he's not gone over the 17-point mark. Yeah. And you're looking at a guy who could have very well done that last night, but he had 2 points. I mean, they got to 3 points. They made it a 3-point game with 5 minutes left. No Josh Richardson, obviously no Joel Embiid.
Yeah, Thibault was in foul trouble also. That, you know, another factor that played in.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And right. He hit the three to pull him within five.
Right.
Or excuse me, pull him within three with 5 minutes left. And I'm thinking, oh, they got this. I can't believe it. They're going to win this game. And then the wheels came off. There was no stopping. The first off, you made stupid plays. You turned the ball over. I think Simmons had 2 of his 8 turnovers maybe in the final 5 minutes. And you didn't see him play aggressive in the least bit. And that can't be how you play this game if you're going to be one of the best point guards or one of the best overall players in the league. To choose when you go to that next gear, that's not something that should exist for a guy that's supposed to be getting to the point of an elite athlete.
And knowing that you struggle going to Toronto, it just feels like this would be a game that you would turn it on.
Yeah.
This would be a game that you should turn it on because you know you struggle here. Why not have that same type of aggression, that same type of mentality that you just had against the Nets? Bring that to Toronto because you know it's an area that you haven't won.
All right, let's get to Eric in Richboro. Eric, what's going on, man?
Hey, guys, how are you tonight?
Great.
Wow, this morning.
Yeah,
we're doing all right, man.
I may have stayed up all night. Yeah, we don't know.
I'm so stressed out that I'm still thinking it was last night because of how terrible that game was. So I have my whole rant here is Ben Simmons starting there, ending with Brett Brown. How do you have more turnovers than you have shots in the game? And just not rebounding, not trying to do anything extra in the fourth quarter. Then you go and look at, like, Al Horford. Al Horford, I looked up some stats last night, shooting about 40% of his shots this year are three-pointers. In 2017, 2018, he took about 800 shots. Only 25% of them were three-pointers, and he averaged the same point. So it's like, clearly Al needs to be inside more, and on a night when you don't have Joel Embiid, why aren't you posting him up? Shake Milton playing all those minutes. I know he's a club Tyroner, but you got this guy, Trey Burke, on the bench who is a scorer, will beat a guy off the dribble, will get to the hole, maybe get you some free throws, be a little more aggressive in a game where I thought we could have used that. So I don't see that the point there. And then rebounding. Your best rebounder is hurt. That means all five guys should be trying to rebound the ball. I think they out-rebounded us by like almost 10, which can't happen, especially when you know you're missing your rebounder. Mm. And I've never been a Brett Brown, like fire Brett. I always thought, like, this is the year this is really where we evaluate him. And I'm not saying fire him now, but there's constant mistakes where we're shooting 60% of our shots last night from behind the arc. Last time I checked, maybe Furkan Korkmaz is a 40% three-point shooter, but we don't have many three-point shooters who are going to light it up every single night. So why are we allowing that? You call a timeout, you say, listen, we need to get the ball in the paint and work from the inside out. Then the substitutions, there's just so many problems with that game last night that it doesn't make me feel optimistic about the playoffs, especially if we I'm saying if we make it past the second round. So I'm pretty down, but it felt good to get some stress out this morning.
Well, Eric, that's what we're here for, man. Thanks for the call, buddy.
Take it easy. He makes a good point. Al Horford, the last 4 years, averaged 232 threes a year. This year, he's on pace for 320.
97.5, The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.